and we hope to get the division in the same place as soon as we come to offer the last speaker. That is one visitor from India that is hosting something like this.
That are not traditional leaders in India.
Yeah.
We'll hear from the report. Yeah.
From the committee side, Kapal from Mr. Matoko.
And Mr. Kelvin, we will arrive later. I apologize, that's enough. My board will soon have a comment.
No, just on my behalf. I'm submitting it.
Yeah?
I'm submitting it. Like one of the ministers, they say. They look the same.
Not the same.
The
minister is not a member of the committee. Kelvin is a member of the committee. Separation of power.
I will tell the secretary.
Yeah, also not more than the separation of power. Okay, so let's get us started with our meeting. Then we'll take this apology. Honorable Deputy Minister, what you want us to do, and tell the general that it will be easy. And have a discussion on this matter of traditional affairs.
The Secretary Chairperson of the committee, honorable members present, officials from department and also from parliament side. We are here to present on the role of the traditional leaders in South Africa. I will start by just giving a context. And then the video will then represent in terms of the roles and functions as governed by the principles of legislation, the constitution, and the white paper put together. So I will then be specific in terms of those. In terms of the context, we want to bring to the attention of South Africa as a community that there is a system of constitutional leadership that exists in South Africa side by side with a democratic system. This system is being recognized through the constitution, and later a white paper was developed arising from the white paper on local government of 1998. If you go through the white paper on local government, there are five pages that are dedicated to their role of traditional leaders within the local government sphere and their responsibilities. But it also goes on to say a separate white paper on traditional leaders must then be developed to deal with the number of issues that we did in the 1998 local government white paper. And the white paper eventually was developed on traditional affairs that then catered on those issues. And it led to the Traditional Affairs Framework Act. And when you look at the Framework Act, obviously there are quite a number of challenges. But the issues in the white paper on local government and the white paper on traditional affairs were not all included in the Framework Act. Hence, the movement going forward towards the traditional affairs will then help us to close the gap and ensure therefore that we are able to fulfill issues in both white papers on local government and the white papers on traditional affairs. There is an estimate that 1 million South Africans who believe in a form of traditional leadership or practices or both put together in South Africa. And obviously, the intention, obviously, with the constitution and the recognition is to bring respect, to support it, and ensure that it supports us to evolve and be stronger and to play their role. They are all over the country, some in the urban areas and others in the rural areas. Even those in the urban areas, they still believe in the form of traditional leadership. And when you look at the number of advisors that are advisors of OCCS, that has the capacities of traditional leaders in South Africa, you find that they are quite learned people, very famous people, very wealthy people, who you find advising the kings and the chiefs across the nation. I met some since I came into the function, all kinds of things. Yeah, whether I'm advising servants from you. I know you to be a believer of an anti-dial system of life. He says, no, but this is my traditional leader and I respect the institution, I respect that is why. So therefore, we don't really have to then encapture that. Yes, we are Republicans, it's a small R, but a capital R, all Republicans who obviously have a form of traditional leadership that exists in South Africa. It's not a monarchy system, it's not an absolute monarchy system. It's a system that lives side by side with democracy. There is all a point, therefore, as a result of this question that we need to grapple with as a committee on the national question. The national question in South Africa, has it been resolved or not yet resolved since the advent of democracy in 1994? In the process of resolving the national question. And here, the national question, and I just quote from the ruling party, the constitution, it says the liberation of black people in general and Africans in particular. So these Africans in particular in the national question, in the African biasness of that particular national question, so the most oppressed grouping and nearly destroyed their traditional system of life and everything and their tradition are Africans themselves that we need to continuously liberate and ensure therefore that we bring that dignity, respect to the Africans as a whole. The system of colonialism, neocolonialism, and apartheid and apartheid has indeed destroyed the traditional leadership institution of South Africa. After the many battles were fought, others won and others lost during the colonial conquest, after they were treated in deep state division, were inserted in where there was a divided rule. Those who still viewed this as a colonialism that was taking away their land were isolated, marginalized, imprisoned, and others were taken overseas and beheaded as traditional leaders. Having fought for the question of their own land. And then others then who became subjugated, unfortunately, they were then used to divide others. And then families that were the custodian of that traditional leadership were removed, disposed, and then obviously other people were then brought in. Hence the disputes and the deals that are there. The Tribal Commission has to deal with a number of thousands and thousands of disputes and claims, which was to correct what went wrong as a result of the apartheid colonialism and the financial system can be done on the traditional leadership as well. We are currently left with 700 cases on the side of, I think the report will speak to that, that we need to conclude by December 2015, claims and disputes that are still there, arising from what the Labour could not conclude and then finish the time at the end of the commission itself. Is really to then bring restoration, dignity, and respect to the institution, and indeed to deal with the national question with the African violence in it. We also have seen in recent times when a former leader of Libya, Gaddafi, organized traditional leaders in Africa and installed himself as the king of kings and organized all of them throughout the region and all Africa to say we need to be restored. That program in the agenda is continuing, not by the department, by the traditional leaders themselves. They are engaging with other traditional leaders in the continent and in the region to reorganize what was started and then with a view to lobby the AU, that the AU must be the house of traditional leaders, an advisory house. So when one that happens because they are lobbying on their own with the president, not coming through parliament, not coming through the committee, we might then have see an eventuality of a system and a presence of a recognized system that might emerge, that might come to parliament for ratification. So I think I'm bringing this under the committee, my question has really alive on the issue. As the traditional leaders are indeed organizing themselves in the regions and also in the regions and for that.
So we have therefore, Chair, I would want to then give to the DG, the Professor Noyede, to then present on our situation in South Africa, the laws that govern, and then later I will then come back on terms of the way forward.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, colleagues. We are supposed to present on the roles and functions of the Prime Minister. And I also wanted to indicate that we have not covered the Koi and San in the presentation, and we know that they are also in the process of being recognized through the bill which is currently being copied at. And the reason why they have not been considered through the Constitution may be an important point to mention, given the historical background that the Deputy Minister has done, that by 1994, the Koi and Sons history had not been written anywhere. It had been obliterated completely. And what was recognized in 1994, what was in existence, which is the African traditional leadership in various forms. So in 2003, there was a progress of the white paper that the Deputy Minister talked about, which had also research and commissioned to research on the history of the Koi and San and so on, that constituted what we now have as the bill. So at a later page, there will be part of that. The first slide, the first slide comes from section 212 of the Constitution, which provides that the institution, status and role of traditional leadership according to customary law are recognized subject to the Constitution. Secondly, traditional authority that observes the system of customary law may function subject to any applicable legislation and customs, which include amendments to or repeal of that legislation or those customs which are not conforming to constitutional principles. Number three, the courts must apply customary law when that law is applicable, subject to the Constitution and any other legislation that specifically deals with customary law. Policies and legislation have been put in place to give effect to their power. Constitution injunction, and the white paper on traditional leadership and governance as a government policy all support the institution of traditional leadership to embrace democracy and the principles of equality, efficient governance, transparency and accountability. Traditional leaders are required to pay special attention to the objectives of the white paper to speed up the process of transformation of the institution, which is the primary objective of the white paper. Other objectives of the white paper include, among others, in creating an institution of traditional leadership that responds and adapts to change, promotes freedom, human dignity, and the achievement of equality and non-sexism, and an institution that promotes democratic governance. The preamble to the traditional leadership and governance framework Act of 2003 states clearly that the state seeks to transform the institution of traditional leadership in line with the constitutional imperatives, and specifically provides that the state must respect, protect, and promote the institution of traditional leadership in accordance with the dictates of democracy in South Africa. In giving effect to the constitutional injunction alluded to above, a preamble to the Personal Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003 further enjoin the state to transform the institution of personal leadership so that it is in harmony with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The transformation of the institution of personal leadership in line with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is a non-negotiable imperative that is on the agenda of the state so that the democratic governance and the values of an open and democratic society may be promoted. And the issues of gender equality within the institution may progressively be advanced. In terms of legislation, it is important that the institutions of traditional leadership promote democratic governance and the values of an open and democratic society. Progressively advance gender equality within the institutions of traditional leadership, promote freedom, human dignity and achievement of equality and non-sexism, strive to enhance tradition and culture, promote nation building and harmony and peace amongst people, promote the principles of cooperative governance in their interaction with all spheres of government and orders of state, and promote an efficient, effective and fair dispute resolution system and a fair system of administration of justice. While traditional courts promote restorative justice based on community rehabilitation of the offender, where the family and the institution of traditional leadership play a central role in dispensing and overseeing the implementation of this type of justice, the formal courts recognized in the Constitution generally apply community justice, which is the primary characteristic of the Roman Dutch law. To the extent that it is so, traditional courts are an instrument for building social cohesion, unity and peace, while the formal courts primarily punish offenders and if necessary remove them from society. And it is important to note that the Constitution and the legislative framework demonstrate that in a constitutional democratic state, the institution of traditional leadership cannot be immune to change and transformation. The challenge is ensuring that in doing that, the institution is not undermined and that it is kept true to African values and that its role is clearly defined in relation to that of a democratic state within the framework of cooperative governance. The White Paper requires a provision be made to allocate the following additional roles to traditional leadership. In addition, national and provincial departments through legislation or other means shall provide for the traditional councils and their leadership, among others, the following functions: to promote indigenous knowledge systems, music, oral history, and the commemorative events, promote the preservation of heritage resources, land and agriculture, play a role in land administration, advise government on agricultural development and improvement of farming methods, promote sustainable use of land, advise government and participate in programs geared to prevent cruelty to animals. In terms of health and welfare, advise and play a role in traditional health practices and rituals, including initiation schools. Advise and participate in nationwide health campaigns, for example, in terms of cholera, HIV and AIDS, TB, etc. Facilitate community access to pensions and ensure social grants. Promote the protection of the vulnerable, including children, elderly, and the disabled. Justice, security, and home affairs. To play a role in the administration of the traditional system of justice. To play a role in the provision of safety and security to traditional communities. To play a role in the registration of births, deaths, and customary marriages. Act as authorities for the administration of courts. Play a role in the restoration of peace in rural areas. And in terms of economic development, support local economic development initiatives. In terms of environment and tourism, promote environmental management. Promote sustainable use of natural resources within communities. And in terms of national resource management, to promote sustainable traditional approaches to water resource management. And in terms of communication and information, to play a role in communication and information dissemination of government policies and programs. And it is important also to know that the White Paper determines a number of binding, guiding principles and norms for the allocation of roles and functions to social councils and their leadership. In providing for these roles, national and provincial departments must consult with the national minister or the provincial MEC responsible for traditional leadership matters or issues. Consult with relevant structures of traditional leadership, ensure that the allocation of roles and functions is consistent with the constitution and applicable legislation. Take into account customary law and customary practices of the different communities. Strive to ensure that the allocation of roles and functions is accompanied by policies and, where necessary, appropriate measures for accounting for the resources are put in place. Ensure that, to the extent possible, the allocation of such roles and functions applies uniformly in areas where the institution of traditional leadership exists, and promote the ideals of corporate governance, integrated planning, sustainable development and service delivery. In responding to the need to provide for a role for traditional leadership at the local level of community organizing, effect must be given to the constitutional and legislative injunctions contemplated in Chapter 12 of the Constitution and Sections 19 and 20 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003. It must, however, be noted that Section 19 does not allocate any specific roles and functions to traditional leaders, except for customary roles and functions. And whereas the White Paper indicated preemptory allocation of roles and powers to traditional leaders, Section 20 only provides for the discretionary allocation of roles and functions to traditional leaders. As regards the statutory framework for the allocation of roles and assignment of functions, Section 20 of the current Act provides for the following interlinked steps. If we look at Section 20, Section 1, provides for a decision on the allocation of roles to traditional leaders and traditional councils by the national executive or provincial executive by means of a resolution. The next subsection 2 of the same session then provides for the assignment of the performance of certain parts or functions as identified by the line functionary, whether the minister or MEC or board, by means of a specific focus delegation. Subsection 3 of the same session provides for the establishment of a monitoring and evaluation system. And the subsection 4 of the same session determines that if resources were made available and have not been used appropriately, they may thereafter be removed from the entity to whom it has been transferred. So Section 21 rests in national and provincial government. The discretion to allocate traditional roles and functions to traditional leaders and traditional councils by means of legislation or by means of other measures, e.g. cabinet, provincial executive council resolution, departmental programs, regulations, and other things. Unlike the White Paper, it also does not address what specific roles traditional leaders, traditional councils should be given within the listed field of functional domain by the national and provincial government and the other organs of state. It is generally submitted that the determination of true basic needs in rural communities must be approached in a sensitive manner and in close collaboration along essentially two distinct but complementary routes. Being on the one hand the proactive route according to which government takes the initiative directly in facilitating the debate on the provision of basic needs that community initiatives such as those facilitated by traditional leaders. Issues such as job creation should also involve traditional leaders' effective role players. The need for a creation of jobs is manifest throughout the country in all sectors and at all levels. Employment creation is therefore envisaged as not the sole jurisdiction or responsibility of a single agency or department or government, but must be the preoccupation of all sectors, which obviously includes the involvement of traditional leaders and their councils. The housing needs, especially in traditional areas, are of great concern to traditional councils who are eager and willing to become involved in housing development projects. It is therefore submitted that housing development projects extended to traditional communities and cease to be regarded as urban programs. It is further submitted that the role of the state should not only be to regulate and facilitate housing development with the already established private companies. Wherever practically feasible, local contractors and subcontractors should play a major role in delivering the delivery system. This arrangement will in turn lead to bearing in mind the high level of illiterate ignorance and disease. It is committed that educational and health matters be given strong consideration. Special leaders as custodians of the sacrosanct values and inspirations they live with the program on democratic transformation is an important tool that can assist and to further consolidate and preserve the culture, traditions and languages. A main question for traditional council remains a crucial point of debate. The evolution of South African land policies removes most powers and functions that traditional leaders have on land administration in terms of their customary laws and daily to government. These powers are returned as a function to the traditional leadership. With a third chain, traditional leaders were managing land on behalf of government. This contrary to the actual position of customary law of African communities. Traditional leaders have a definite role to play in the rural economy. The constitutional principle that local government should bring basic amenities to the people at grassroots level must incorporate and include traditional leadership and institutions as an integral component of harmonizing the relationship between traditional leaders and municipalities. An effective cooperative model of governance is an incredible opportunity which can be utilized to deepen cooperation, communication and consultation between all organs of state and traditional leadership institutions. Democratization of governance, decision-making, law-making, processes and decision implementation is impossible without effective traditional leadership participation, particularly in the development of traditional communities. Despite the anomalies and defects inherent in the institution of traditional leadership, it would be inappropriate to reduce the power by killing the method of governance. Traditional leaders control vital resources such as land and play a very important role for any service delivery and development strategies to be implemented in the rural area. Furthermore, these traditional leaders are the authentic voice of the communities in the rural area or traditional communities. They must be able to take their rightful place in the modern governance and all transformation processes. The reason being that traditional leaders leadership is the voice which articulates and translates aspirations and interests of people on matter of rural development and traditional governance. To give full effect to the intention of the Constitution, the policy and regulatory framework, as well as to the spirit and letter of the Cabinet Resolution on the allocation and assignment of role and functions, it is strongly recommended that the Department takes the necessary steps to address these issues in a comprehensive manner, so as to ensure the establishment and the implementation of a coherent system of governance to provide the framework for regulating the precise support to be given to the three spheres of government. With regard to partnerships with various people, the identification of personal roles, functions, establishment of criteria, structure, political, ethical, minimum, etc. Allocation of funding for training, national governance, institution training of national, etc. And I'll not go through all those things. But also to say that, lastly to say that, because traditional localities are within wall-to-wall municipalities, and the points that have been made in conclusion are that the tension arises when those roles are not well defined, as I was saying. And thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Director General. Welcome the Minister. Welcome to the Minister. Thank you for coming. We had the report. Okay. Honorable Deputy Minister, you want to make a point?
Yeah, the last concluding remarks. We have 885 traditional councils in South Africa. I think that should be noted. And then
traditional
cancer, leaders and cancers. Every traditional leader is a traditional cancer. And the participation in the municipality model is on rotational basis. A group of them will then be determined by NEC in the whole province as to because there are many in the municipality, so many can participate for a period so that they can go in rotational. Where it's only one, then it will be one. And then there are 11 kings. Three of them are esteemed, meaning when they die, no one in the family will be allowed to be a king. Their data then get reduced to a senior traditional council. Because the commission has found that they were installed as kings, but they were not the Jew family or that was supposed to be. But to be fair to them now, because they are still alive, it was then agreed that they esteemed more than be developed. So it became until they die, but no one will then succeed them. So we may end up with 9 all going back because there are new recognitions that might be arising as a result of the new claims for certain things. But some of them were rejected by the president. Out of 38, only one was recognized, but we have not yet communicated the matter as to which one was recognized. We will not be in a position to say now until the due process with the minister will then be unfolding. So where the king is one in that particular area, and then the king don't participate in the district municipality or district municipality, really depending on the geography of the municipality that you are. Rather, the majority of them only participate at the local municipality. And on the back to basics document, therefore, we, having realized this traditional council participation in the municipalities, we have a section, page statement of the presentation of the that talks about the harmonization of the relationship, specifically on their participation, their role, because they are complaining that they go in there, the boys that take pictures with them and they will be told to smile, and their voice undermines, for even when the photo shows they are not interviewed seriously. And there is just about the nature of the relationship. And on issues of land use, there are quite a number of conflicts that are arising between municipalities and them. They are holding the land in trust, the trust that are established and registered with the Department of Rural and Land Reform. The land does not belong to the chief or the king, it belongs to the people. So the chief holds in trust on behalf of the community, and then the trust would be in the Department of Rural Development. If there's any activity on that land, economic activity, royalty fees of minerals and social development plans, all of them get paid through the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. But of late, obviously, when we were checking just to look at the best examples and best practices, we found that quite a number of companies have defaulted. There's no connection that was done by the Department of Reform and Land Reform and Rural Development, except for one or two provinces like the Northwest, where they had what we call the development account or a D account, which itself has its own problems and challenges, which we are still trying to get to know and understand the department through the minister. So then we first find that in that particular issue of the land use, the municipalities want to develop. And then most of the land in those municipalities, you find that people don't understand because they bulldoze, they just go in, and they build. And it has now become a bone of contention between them. So hence the issue of harmonization. So the department is currently studying which one of the traditional councils are best practices, which we could describe as in the green, and those that you think that they are on the ember. They are either going to go west if you don't do anything, or they can be assisted to improve to be better. And those are dysfunctional. The traditional councils that are completely dysfunctional. So that we then have a corrective measure in the harmonization program as part of the federal basis. And then develop enhanced relationships. We'll then see about whether it's a regulatory way or especially in the Municipal Structures Act. Because the Structures Act has only 2 paragraphs. So we can then begin to either look at it as a way of harmonization and then regularizing it and even putting it there. Then there's a new development that I did from the minister last week when I visited the Bahasa in the Northwest. They built a stadium as part of the training facility in 1912 for the World Cup. And then at the time of the building, they were told that out of the specific use for the municipality to the property, sewer plant, it was 1 people gathered in 1 stadium at a time. You need the capacity of the sewer system that can be able to be functional. So the fiscal council and the chief have put the municipality to say, can you help us with the flood because it's a public commodity sewer. And it will also extend to the community because they're using septic toilets, and we can then now extend the length for people to use flush toilets. The municipality told them that they don't have money, it's not in the IDP. So the issue of the IDP consultation also, they get in court like everybody else. There's no special stakeholder IDP focused type of interaction where if the personnel does a wheelchair, they have the money and they want to see development taking place, they can then express their views so that they can be integrated to the IDP and be a joint plan. So the traditional leadership went and then raised money, also using their own money because they are in the platinum belt, and then they were able to get it, and they then developed the sewer plant, and they stayed down before the training facility, and indeed it was used. Now they've just recently built a mosque. They filmed very similar approach, also the capacity of the electricity so that it's minimal, we need to upgrade it. So they went to the council and say, I have 5 million, give me 5 million, jointly 10 million rand, let's go and then develop the capacity. And then council says, it's not in the IDP, we're going to get the money. And they proceeded, and then they then developed an upgrade of the electricity supply. The mall is now functional. Now, the land is a traditional land, the mall is privately developed, the tenants are represented in the mall by the traditional leader. The council, a month ago, went in, went to every tenant and say, the tax and rate now are charging authority. And the chief went and said, when I came to you to select villages, cut out the roads, put up electricity, they did not only use it, didn't have money. Now, why do you go to the people and say, now you want tax and rate from them without even coming to me? Why didn't you come then to develop a share model where I can say, so much percentage is still, I want to support my council, and then I still have money that I used, which unpublic goods that are supposed to be delivered by you as a municipality. What is this? So that is the issue that we'll have to do, and because Royal Bafokeng is another case, I think you know the problem of Royal Bafokeng has been Barcelona, and Mahatma Mamukwe, they are the most wealthiest of the Inner Northwest. They are also coming, the deal that the president don't meet is now giving the shares no longer in office. All of this, they've opted to go away from royalty into sharing model with the mining company. And then the new best discovery in Spela Fort, Steelport, Kaptoa, Masala, in Limpopo. All those traditional leaders, they are going there now to the Northwest to go and then a model of a option of sharing rather than royalty because royalty is never come. And that therefore, now we'll be having traditional communities that are going to be on the rise, wealthy, who've got the money and municipalities are there, they don't have the money, which develops what? And when you go to them, you find out they have tidier roads, they put their own electricity, it's a huge development that is. So they were not in the model of a city, that don't do a city, a 10-year plan to come up with a city. Models are around the West Central East, but right in the rural area, where there will be coexistence of the city and the rural development. So we have to really look at that issue. And then the last one then is the issue of the other forms of economic activity. Quite a number of traditional leaders in Bumalanga, Limpopo, and Kwazulu-Natal have entered into agreements with the big companies around the issues of forestry. They are also getting royalties that are being paid and not paid. And therefore, this model of shareholding has been influenced also on them. Because then they move and then they talk amongst themselves. And very soon the companies that are developing the forestry will then be approached to say, let's go convert from royalty to shareholding because you are planting on our land. Agriculture is the same in almost all provinces in the Northwest. When after winning the land claims, they feed that land back to the commercial companies, but the commercial companies are not honoring their royalties. So, and the traditional leaders are also complaining to say, we need to help them. And then also all the fishery in the Eastern Sea, quite a number of them are also coming up to say, we are robbed, and then therefore they want those deals to be resolved. So we'll have to work with other departments, fishery, the minerals, and then really to get to develop a model that can be a working model for all of them, so that we don't just leave it for each individual case number. So in short, therefore, that when you look at the all mandates as described by the DG, the 4 to 5 what you call the strategic priority. The first one being the restoration, the stabilization and the strengthening of the traditional leadership mandate. We call them pillar one or strategic priority one, because it's fulfilled in the law, in the constitution and everywhere. The second one is the preservation, the protection and the promotion of cultural practices, traditional, customary, ritual type of way of life that we also receive as a mandate also that we say that the traditional leader shouldn't do and not restore. The third one is the transformation agenda that we feel that it still has to be there to modernize the traditional leadership and institution and also certain practices that are harmful and unfortunate that are not consistent with the Bill of Rights and also with the Constitution, such as Ubuntualwa, which is a discriminatory form of practice against women. Ubuzila has also been raised by women who say why women have to sit up 12 months, mourn for 12 months, with black clothes and so forth, and the men is only allowed to mourn only for 3 months. Why that discriminatory gender discrimination that is being pointed out. So there are quite a number that the Minister for Women is now identifying as cultural practices that they think are offensive to women, and might then have to look at the transformation of those practices on the floor. So we were putting it as pin number 3 as a long endeavor to identify, we cannot ignore them. And then the fourth one is the promotion and action, especially in economic activities, in a model that can be a working model for all of them, so that we don't leave it to individual chances, because as we leave them to individual chances, as I described, there are other traditional, there are countries that are arising within the country, or there are strong states that are arising within the province. When you go to the Royal Bank of Spain, they don't work with the province of Northwest, except that they know each other. They will do their own things, and then so forth. But then say the role of the municipality is to rezone any development, even if it's with traditional associates. So that traditional leaders will not just develop for the sake of development because they got money. So we need them to come in and say, what are the models that can work for this economic activity? And the revival of the slope Lima, Ilisima, and also to do the traditional issues of what the other culture called golden economy. The products in Amakalabas, produce them in numbers and sell to the market, and also take them to the international market because they are still demand. Flower pots in our own houses in the urban area. They could really have in the activation of the economy. And so we are taking it as a strategy product number 4. And then the last one, that they must be involved as a voice in social cohesion and nation building. As traditional leaders, so the social ills in society, they can also be a voice and the moral that can really help us in the building of our nation and the social cohesion of the country. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. For your consideration. Honorable Samuel.
Thank you very much, sir, my colleague, Deputy Minister. From where I am, I can't say Minister, but I would like to say greetings to the Minister as well. First of all, I actually want to welcome the presentation and thank you, Chair, for ensuring that you get this opportunity to interact in this fashion and with the important stakeholders of the department, which is the House and Senate. Thank the Deputy Minister as well, the team. I've listened very attentively to what has been said, and all of it, excuse me, sounds right, it strikes the correct quote and so on. But I see on slide 19, Honourable Deputy Minister, the one slide which I actually want to refer to on the cabinet resolution. I would imagine that refers to the cabinet resolution of 2000, which was chaired by then Deputy President and now President Zuma, which had spoken about Chapter 7 and 12 of the Constitution, them being amended to sort of concretize the roles and functions of traditional leaders. Now, because then I have changes that all of this sounds very piecemeal, and we will need to arrive at a concrete conclusion in terms of this question, whether we actually see through those committee resolutions or we don't, and then move forward in another basis. Because yeah, the challenges are big, and the chief among them is that municipalities are undermining traditional leaders and traditional councils by all measurable standards. And they are able to flex their muscles because they've got the financial capacity which traditional councils do not have. And of course, the deputy minister has cited two other examples, but those examples are from the ocean in comparison to what is actually happening out there. Now, then traditional councils find themselves trading behind and reduced to, as you correctly say, picked opportunities and not being able, in effect, to see through with the great plans that you have here in terms of the roles and functions that we envisage, simply because there is a bias towards municipalities. There is no obligation really for municipalities in law to consult and engage traditional councils as relevant stakeholders. The issue of representation in council is pretty much very ceremonial, and I think that the interesting question translates to the voting rights because councils, whilst traditional leaders will be there, may express themselves and, you know, point to issues that they would deem necessary. But at the end of the day, municipalities have got no obligation whatsoever to take into account what has been said. So you find that whilst we acknowledge that traditional councils form part of the local government structure, let's say, is a strong bias in terms of all the capacity and the know-how and the financial strength towards municipalities, and traditional councils play second fiddle to that. And those are the types of things that we need to address. I mean, we can put, for a moment, we can put aside the petty issues about, in Israel, for example, for a very long time, if the provincial house wanted to meet and they would make a simple request to the department for bottled water, just bottled water, nothing else, just bottled water, that would be a big issue to say, no, go get the water yourself. Why should we really bother? Those are the kind of things which we need to look at, whether these institutions we are creating are being given the necessary support for them to function. My final point through which would be the issue of which is linked to the finances. We've spoken about collections, and of course we must be sensitive to that communities may not have monies to pay up for all sorts of things which have traditionally been paid for. But in instances where those collections are being made, like your coins are free, for example, if you want to build in a traditional area, those monies have been deposited to COPTA at a provincial level, and the requisitions of traditional councils want to make use of that money. That has become a long-winded bureaucratic process, which is frustrating due process in terms of how traditional councils want to make use of the money that they do collect. One would not, of course, advocate for a rate to spend that would be out of the question. This is people's money. But at the same time, the access to your own funds, how you access those funds, pretty much determined by somebody else, and you need to buckle to their whims. If they, feel in a good mood that day, then you get it. If they don't, then you don't get it. So I think that the levels of frustration continue to mount because the system seems to, age out traditional councils and traditional leaders. But the vexing question is how to arrive at a working conclusion, a progressive conclusion to the issues of Chapter 7 and 12 of the Constitution, vis-a-vis the cabinet resolution of 2000. Thank you very much, Chair.
And thank you very much, Honourable
regalo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning from the department and the minister and the deputy minister. I think Ushengwa is very much passionate about this thing of traditional leadership, hence he has taken, I think, most of my point. But what I'll say is this indicates that it is a work in progress. Because earlier on when the presentation was still being done, I had some questions in terms of saying what plans are there in place in terms of the strategies. But the minister, when he came after, you know, he did mention some of the strategies that the deputy minister he did indicate some of the strategies that are now in place. Because I can see that many gaps that have been realized, the strategy will come and assist in some of these gaps. Like for instance, because I happened to be closer to one district municipality, if I may make an example, it does have a relationship with the traditional leaders. Like there is a budget for traditional leaders, but their role is indeed a ceremonial role, because they only come in when it's these individuals or when it's other activities that are related to them. But in terms of decision making, when there are council meetings in terms of taking resolutions and whatever, in terms of the development that is there, even in them having input in the IDPs, they don't have the choice. When they are in council meetings, they're just sitting there, the council meeting when it's out, it's that issue as the deputy minister mentioned, that they only taking pictures and whatever. But they are housed in a district. There is a budget annually for them. They are being assisted greatly, but there are those gaps. Like for instance, I happened to also sit in one meeting whereby one traditional leader was present, and he made mention of many things in terms of when even sometimes they even went to an assembly. He went to an assembly whereby sometimes local government, when you do things, you don't involve us. And sometimes you can even advise. He made mention that when there are posts available, maybe for senior managers, you just take. You don't involve us. Sometimes we can advise, we can help them, because sometimes you know these people. We can also play a role in also recommending that who maybe can you consider in appointing for a certain job. So because you leave us, we are not having a voice, and when things get old, haywire, you know, in terms of the changes that may be there, in terms of service delivery or progress, in terms of the development of the local municipality, we will not be having a say, but we will be saying, oh, it's your mess, you know, we don't have any role because we are not involved. So I think maybe as the department is coming, I think we are going to be asked at the end of the day, because there are issues, really, there are issues, and I think that the department really is indicating that it's coming to closer to these issues, and at the end of the day, the yielded results maybe will be issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mba.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
How much traditional leaders are there?
You can ask the minister if in the urban community there. Yeah. Maybe that's what also when I speak, I'm going to get to the issue that you are raising. The first one, maybe we should have Chairperson introduced who is here. And maybe we like to, usually we do that for us to understand. Now, I don't understand. I see the minister, I see the DG. I expected to see a house of traditional leaders, or to have reps, one or two, for me to understand, in putting my questions, who are we dealing with today?
Now, we'll do introduction.
No. The issue is that I'm trying to say we should have done that before. Because now, we wanted to see the leadership of traditional leaders. Now, myself, I'm not going there to. I know the minister I've worked with for a long time. I know him, but I don't know who else is it. The deputy minister. I can see it here. Yeah. But please, I think it would help me to say what up. Usually we do that. I do not want to disturb you.
Continue
about our members in our contact. Yeah, but here you must have said that we did not do what we're supposed to do. I understand. We want us to grow the line of march. We must understand that who we're dealing with.
Okay, now
for some of the questions, don't answer them. Okay. You will assume that I don't know who am I speaking to. Firstly, I must say that I think the minister raises a very important issue when he opened about the issue of the evolution of the traditional leadership. Because I always linked that with the evolution of men. Because traditional leadership could have a different definition of where they evolve. Others from a spiritual point of view, Adam and Eve, others from a dialectical point of view. But I think what is common on this is that the evolution of traditional leadership goes hand in hand also with the evolution of what we call a family. It starts there, and how communities develop. That's where it goes and size the nation. But that cannot be separated to issues of ownership. I always want to leave that because it goes hand in hand to issues of ownership, land ownership and so on and so on. That's why the minister talk about issues of dispossession, don't want to get to the end because I don't understand. But issues of ownership are very important in relation to this. But I listened to the objectives of the white paper in terms of traditional leadership. I think the discussion we need to get into is that what is it that we want to do as South Africa? And what is it that we want to use traditional leaders for in this country? I have heard the DG explaining that we are not, or the minister, are not in a monarchy state and so on and so on and so on. But is it the role of traditional leadership really not limited in the case of the principles of the constitution to ceremonial responsibility? That really the photos and all these other things that goes with it, that the constitution and all other legislation limits their role to that. That when you want to talk about moral regeneration, you take them and put them there favor with your clothes of traditional leadership and say the traditional leadership supports this. But our legislative framework, maybe we would want to be clever here and try to think about new innovations that don't exist. I want to open that I want to know who we're talking to wants to understand, because the constitution and the framework we have, I think it limits them to that, and we should be honest about it. And if there is a plan to try and deal with the legislative framework and their contribution in the legislative and government in what to do, we must be told that there's a plan. If there's no plan, we're going to keep on like it is. When there's an individual, we put a thing, a valentine in the opening of the keys at end legislature. The key open the house and close. Is that the role of traditional leaders? That one is the same to the traditional leaders too. The second aspect of the question relates to what kind of an institution we want to be really, if we talk traditionally, that Adil is really that want to be really, what models have we learned from, and we have no plan of saying what institution, because this is going to get to the detail I want to. What instrument? I have been reading here from the police, the instruments available. We have, maybe because traditional leaders themselves, the feudal system of development, or use the federal approach in this, even their benefits, you'll find out that you have a king in KZN, 50 million rand of an office of traditional leaders funded. The support given is different from the kings in Limpopo or the Eastern Cape. It is because of the federal aspect of this that the provinces decide on a framework. Now, I always look at the Bafokeng. Because of their strategic location, they have this mine all over them. They don't even need these other packages that you get from government. You find that the prosperity growth, even as their approach and some of the resources available, it has moved from being ceremonial to also development, the things we are talking. How do you expect King Namaste? In the Eastern Cape, or King King, to do the same role. No, it's my king, not because it's my king, because I'm the king. Please. I'm the king, my son. What role can a kingdom that does not have available resources? It goes back to what I was raising, the issue of ownership and land. And I sense that in what we're doing in terms of demarcation, that for instance the king, a king of horse, who does not have a demarcated area for instance, that do we look at kingdoms according to area of occupation that the king stays there in KFC, he does not have a responsibility for that. Because I know Abatengo extends beyond KFC, extends beyond boundaries of South Africa. Therefore, that road beyond the areas of the location of monarchies do we think as government we are going to play in relation to that. Because to me, Minister, when I look at this and the manner in which we're focusing on the old demarcation of the role of kingdom as a continuation of the other day special definition of where kingdom lies, because the current demarcation will perpetuate what other day was saying, that the king of other table would be there in KD, will look at him and his interest of his people, and the king of KwaZulu-Natal would look into issues of the king of KwaZulu-Natal as this made to KwaZulu-Natal. It's a continuation of the Bantustan system. Therefore, I want to just throw those few questions, Minister, to say, please, if there's going to be a national framework also getting the privileges of the Greek kingdom, explain to us, if there's not going to be one, can we start a discussion to guide? We can have the richest kingdom and the poorest kingdom. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I thought I was going to be the third speaker because I raised my hand after the Honourable Lady there, but that is not a problem. Honourable Chair, let me first and foremost appreciate the presentation. I both the Deputy Minister and the Director General. You know, the white paper is promising us that at the end of the day, the traditional institutions would be recognized. But one is not convinced that what is being proposed in the white paper is going to come up with fundamental changes as far as the recognition of the traditional councils or institutions is concerned. We are not going to go back and narrate the history about our traditional leaders. But it is a fact, Honorable Chair, that our traditional leaders were there even before politicians came to light. But because of the fact that the leadership of the liberation movement that took over this country in 1994 adopted the same kind of a system, your Westminster system, which during the colonial heydays undermined the status of our traditional leadership. Then the present government continues to undermine our traditional leaders. We must not make our traditional leaders political children, because we, as the people who are from the rural areas, after 10 years of democracy, we view ourselves as second-class citizens. Let me just cite an example here. You know, for instance, when your local municipality talks about the provision of water, water is life, sanitation is dignity. I'm sure that is the slogan of this government. But the people in the rural areas are still subjected to your unreliable boreholes and windmills, or else they are sharing water with the animals. That is after 20 years of democracy. Honorable Chair, if I were to suggest building on this kind of a white paper, first and foremost, let me raise a concern about our traditional leaders who are joining political parties, whereas they are leaders of people who are the members of different political formations in that particular administrative area. If you are saying, for instance, at your local government, municipality, you don't want your MM to be a member of a political party, or she must resign if, for instance, he or she was the regional secretary of the ruling party, and that's citing an example there. But then allow a traditional leader to a member of a certain political party to such an extent that traditional leader becomes a member of parliament. There is a confusion in this thing. But if I conclude, Honorable Chair, I will conclude by raising a question. In May 1910, in some of the provinces, if not in the Eastern Cape only, your traditional councils were elected. If I may check, Honorable Chair, what was the purpose of establishing these traditional councils?
if you are not going to allocate funded roads and functions, because for instance we are having different municipalities here, which are sharing the same jurisdiction with your local municipality. You talk about the access road in this ward, in this village, your district municipality will come again and come with another road. You talk about water, the district municipality will come, but there are no people with expertise in these municipalities as far as the provision of water is concerned. Why, therefore, are we not saving the taxpayers' money by doing away with your different municipalities and take that money, that grant funding, fund your traditional council, so that these traditional councils, they find something to do in their communities? So that is why I'm saying, Honorable Chair, what we are getting from this white paper, it might help, but I'm not convinced. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Madam Sir?
Yes, my concern is the fact that these traditional councils, including the traditional leader, in some instances you find that they have gone as far as lower primary level. Now, given the new dispensation, they are expected to grapple with issues of modernity in these councils. My question is, what is the department actually doing in order to at least to raise their understanding of issues to a reasonable level?
Thank you.
Okay. Chairperson, there is an outcrying of the leadership, the special leadership about the city allowance in the council meeting. If you can check now in the place like Morotil where the council leadership done no more at the council meeting because they didn't get anything for the city allowance. And then this caused a problem when there is the issue of development in the village. If the council wants to develop the village, the chief, the general leadership, the fuse, address to that. Because I take the chief in the council, they are not participating in that meeting. Now, I just want to check if there's anything that the minister can do on basis of that to encourage or influence the leadership to attend the council meetings. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You want a follow-up?
Yes, but on a different point of view.
Okay, now let me come back to you for a second.
Thanks, Chair. I'm reading board document and the department strategic plan. You find that there are also other key points that the strategic plan has identified. For instance, capacitation of the traditional institutions based on their legislative mandate. Do you have any report around that as to how far with such important issues? Also, I'm also interested on the participation of the traditional leaders, when you link them both regional, the local and regional, international, if that establishment that you intended to coordinate on a subject, how myself, the minister, the deputy minister, tried to raise some of those matters, how it started. But can you elaborate on details with the deputy on that one? The last one is the establishment of institutional mechanism for just the coordination of the institutional sector. I'm also interested to know, because these are the things that might come back, yet the department is also identifying their strategic goals. And these are the issues that are, to me, is quite important, that it must form your main priorities. Yeah, I've noticed that you just touch on it, not in detail. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the question and the MPs who have spoken for me with regard to welcoming the presentation. But I also want to say my observation has been that there is great optimism in the country as a whole. Since 2007 in 1994, that the quality of life of people is indeed improving for the better, and will improve for the better as we move into the future. So there's expectations as well of the government. The question of development is one issue that needs to be looked into quite carefully. Because as we all know, development does not mean just water and sanitation. It doesn't mean just cultural practices. It also includes, among others, the whole question of restoring the dignity of our people, which was taken and undermined over many years. Now, as regards to the issues, there are many questions that come up. One of them is the extent to which the state will be able to pay hundreds upon hundreds of traditional leaders. The question is how sustainable is this? We do need to answer the question. As all of us, parliament, traditional leaders, public representatives, cities elsewhere in the provinces, local municipalities, and traditional leaders, etc. So I'm sorry that this is an issue that can't be put on the right line. It's a matter that must be appropriately addressed. And all of us must take responsibility and say, this is what is possible. So that when we talk about institutional traditional leadership, we're not seeing to be really talking about people to pay remuneration to. But ensuring that the institution become an important element in the overall development of the country and our people. I'm not saying that this is what we're saying, but I'm just saying that the issue is not available and it's something that the second issue is the misappropriation of mining that was mentioned by some of the colleagues here. Obviously, although South Africa is land of mineral resources, it's not every local area that has these resources. So we need to look beyond mining. What are the other economic activities that could be encouraged in a quest to develop our own country? is usual is the abundance of human and related resources in some of the urban areas. Traditionally, we used to speak of Ilim, where the plow the field together, the harvest together, and so on. We need to really explore the possibilities of mobilizing business or human resources. And for instance, produce bricks, let me give an example of bricks, and build and modernize houses in these local areas. Now, everybody knows that if you go to Nkopo, for example, you'll find very, very modern villages. But it's not true of the whole country. It wasn't the same. This is not happening to the same scale in some of the, in most of the areas that are diverse in the eastern thing and in Port. Now, the question of buying or government supplying brick building machines and technology and helping people to continue to build their own houses on a cleaner basis. Something like that can be infectiously affect many villages, as a regional example, and impact positively on quality of life of people. But these are some of the things that we need to explore, because at play here will be the question of local councillors, but also the play traditional practices and tapping in on the energy that will be unleashed through working with the institution of traditional disasters. We were speaking about strengthening cooperative governance and eliminate negative competition between traditional leaders and local councillors. I guess that yes, the tensions would remain there because of the nature of the institution. But these tensions need not necessarily be negative, too negative and antagonistic. So the more I guess, Mr., the more we do things together and achieve things together, the more some of these things will become very, very minor. Because it's all about people. Business is not necessarily just supposed to be there for their own sake. It's all about people and improving people and their quality of life.
Thank you very much, Philip. And we invite them to participate in the foundation.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the department's presentation. I just want to raise few issues, both conceptual and some of them very practical issues about the topic that we're discussing today. Now, the first issue is around the challenges of a modernizing society or the institution of traditional leadership. Now, currently, Chair, two-thirds of our population in the country is living in the urban areas. There has been rapid urbanization from the early 1990s up to today. We know that statistically 52% of our population in 1990 was living in the rural areas. And currently, over 62%, actually by 2011 it was 62%. This number is projected to increase. can't remember the figures, sure the department has got the figures. But the projections are that this number is projected to increase. So more and more of our people will be leaving the rural areas to come and relocate in the urban areas. Of course, we know that at certain periods they will obviously go home and come back because this organization is in search of the good life. Now, there is a challenge on the institution of traditional leadership. Secondly, Chair, in many societies, the institution of traditional leadership is more symbolic, representing the various stages of evolution and development of our society. But in most of the countries throughout the world, they are battling with the assignment of tasks and responsibilities to the institution of traditional leadership. The reference was made by the introduction done by the minister, I was not here referring to some countries which are where the king or the queen, monarchies, the head of this of government. Now, for instance, in Britain, it's a monarchy. The queen is the head of government. It's the head of state. Head of state. Yeah. Thank you for the correction. It's the head of state. At the extent to which the queen performs certain tasks within that society is very limited. Limited to the opening of Parliament annually and giving the State of the Nation address. Nothing more significant than the Queen performs in terms of the task. But it's an institution that is symbolic, represents the evolution of the British society. But in the current, situation, very little is that institution performing except its symbolic nature. The second example that can be given is the neighborhood of the Lesotho, where the king of Lesotho is supposed to accept all recommendations that come from the prime minister, including the recent example where there was a crisis in Lesotho. There was nothing that the king could do but just to accept. So it has come to represent, to become a symbol of a photo, but very little in terms of success about the development of the society of the country. So these are some of the issues conceptually, which I think that as we look at the institution of traditional leadership in our country, a question that we need to continue to confront in as far as allocating the necessary responsibility to this institution, taking into account that ours is a modernizing society, that ours is a society different from what it used to be in the past. Of course, we recognize the role that has been played by the traditional leadership, both in the struggle, in anti-colonial struggles, the struggles against domination of our people, the kings, the traditional leadership has played a significant role in those struggles. But society continues to develop, and as it develops, there is a need for that adaptation. For instance, one of the key questions, and there are people who are saying that, who are making an assertion that there are two pieces of legislation which fundamentally altered the character of the South African society. which is the 1910 Union of South Africa Act, which brought about the sharing of power between the imperial powers of Britain and the dependence of the Dutch settlers to the exclusion of the African majority. And the 1913 Land Act, which dispossessed our people of the land, for which the institution of traditional leadership is almost expected to confront this colonial legacy that continues to define our society. And the extent to which it is doing that is something that all of us must collectively attend to that. But some few practical issues, Chair. There is a growing tendency to abuse or exploit the acquisition of rights, especially by the mining company, from the surface owners of the land. Because of this system of the traditional authority holding the land in trust of the community, they become sort of the entry point in this attempt to exploit. The recent example, Chair, is the Mahalagwena situation. There's a village there where it is alleged, I must be very careful to use the word allegation, but it's reported that the traditional leader there has entered into an arrangement to be paid a yearly retainer for the role that the traditional leader has played in the acquisition of the rights of mine in that particular community. And there is a revolt by the community against that, that arrangement. I'm sure colleagues might have read that situation. So how do we mitigate against the system of exploiting of our people for holding the land in trust, particularly the traditional leadership? The other issue is the payment of royalties by the mine. I was involved when I was still in the legislature there in the Northwest Province, where we dealt with the issue of the D account, where the communities were highly exploited. The communities which were supposed to receive the royalties, particularly the Baba Mukhane, did not receive the funds that were intended to them, although the mine had paid that into a particular account. But to discover that this account has been exploited by the officials through the appointment of what they called administrators and administrators who have access to this account. So there may be the move from the royalty payment to the share option may prove to be very beneficial to our community, those who are the surface owners of the land in the particular area. But I think that the department should follow up this question, because it is quite an issue there for the community. The communities were highly exploited. They are suffering. The levels of development are very low, despite the millions of rands that the mines are paying in royalties. Lastly, Chair, the resolution of the dispute in traditional leadership, which continues to be an issue. Just to find out if there is a system that exists for the side of the department to resolve whatever issues that might arise. We know that because of this vested mining interest, on a continuous basis, there are disputes about who's the rightful traditional leader in a particular area. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me invite the minister, deputy minister, and the president. Some of them is a very detailed question. I guess the right step would be attempting to address. But there will be no harm for the department to raise our question. And that we think is relevant for us. There's a smart step to deal with it with the right step.
Yeah. Good morning, and my apologies for being late. Flights from Joburg were delayed, and the traffic in Cape Town is bad when there's a bit of rain. Let me firstly thank the Deputy Minister for standing in and giving the explanation that he did, and for some of the excellent points that colleagues have raised. I suppose at the end of the day, Chairperson, the question raised by three or four of our colleagues is a fundamental issue. In a changing, urbanizing, modernizing, and rapidly, I don't know how you use the word technology in that context, the word technology is penetrating everything we do, how do we balance modernity with tradition? And how do we balance modern constitutional state with traditional structures? And in South Africa, in the post-1990, not even 1994 period, we've tried through the negotiations process in crafting the constitution and subsequently the local government white paper, a formula which would, on the one hand, entrench democratic values and democratic institutions, but at the same time recognize the reality of the positive contribution of traditional leaders historically and in the current context in Chapter 12 and in other pieces of legislation and policy documents that we have. So the fundamental issue that we will always debate is as we go year after year into the 21st century, how do we adapt as circumstances change? And how do we adapt in a constructive way? So that this debate, which should not tarnish the dignity of traditional leaders in any way, takes place in that kind of spirit. The second point that the colleagues have made as well, at the end of the day, really what a leader in a constitutional institution, or democratic institution, or a traditional institution, you're not there to yourself. You're there to actually serve your constituents, your people. And when we talk of development, development is about the people and society as a whole. And perhaps more of our discussion should take place around what are the good things that are happening, what are the best practices that we see in South Africa in this regard. Some of which the department would be aware of, some of which we still have to uncover, some of which you'd be able to tell us, so that we can see who are the front runners among traditional leaders who are, in a sense, creating a new pathway in terms of the developmental role of traditional leadership. I'm sure those examples, Chairperson, would be very helpful to us. The third is the point I want to make is following on the Honourable Mtsepe's point, how do we grapple issues of modernity and how do we consciously prepare ourselves as a society and traditional leaders in particular, but also their constituencies to grapple with the modern challenges that we are faced. We take the example of job creation for us. All of us will talk about it. In a traditional community context or in a modern so-called democratic context. But around the world, job creation is one of the biggest challenges. Why? Because in the more advanced economies, technology, they now recognize, which was a great assistance to increasing human productivity, is now becoming a dubious factor because machines, inverted commas, are replacing human beings. So where traditionally people earn a livelihood through the wage, and the wage was earned by being employed. In the world 20 years from now, not everybody is going to be in a wage-earning job. So where do they get the income from? I don't have any answers. But these are questions that have been raised even by very conservative newspapers, like the Economist magazine. They're raising, as you must know, it's an issue that is beginning to become a matter of serious concern. So in that kind of context, I think we need to search for, on the one hand, ensuring that justice is done in terms of traditional leaders and traditional communities and traditional structures, but at the same time, we've got to lead in terms of understanding the new context and some of the challenges that the new context actually provides for us. There have been a few comments, for example, the Honorable Garo saying good government treats people as second-class citizens, and we have those people who fought for first-class citizenship and sacrificed for first-class citizenship and paid a huge price for it. How are we going to treat people as second-class citizens now? So I think we must be careful in arguing one's case, not to make outlandish claims like this, because I think that's very unfortunate. This issue that we're discussing should be about party politics. We should be looking at the kind of questions that all of you have raised in a constructive way, so that this doesn't become a party political issue at the end of the day. But we should be careful. As Honorable Macondo pointed out, and many others, that 20 years down the road, we've had many things to be proud of, but there are also many things we can't be proud of. The fact that water is not accessible to every South African yet, but over 85% do have access to water. Sanitation is not something that is available to everyone, and boreholes might still be thought that we might be dependent on in some parts of the country. But our aim is not to stay there. Our aim is to go beyond that and to ensure that every South African citizen and everybody living within our geographic borders get access to all of the services that we're able to deliver to them. So, perhaps after the Deputy Minister addresses some of the more specific issues, I might want to make one or two remarks. But there are many areas, Chair, where colleagues have pointed out issues where more facts need to be collected. So I think part of our job would be to say to you, give us an opportunity, perhaps early in the new year, we come back to you so that we have more facts available. How much of money is collected? What happens in the mining area? What happened to the D account? Only a few months ago became familiar with the D account and how hundreds of millions of rand might have disappeared someday. But how many D accounts are there in the country? I don't know. Right? Who had access and control over that money? I don't know. What was the money spent on? Our colleague, Honorable Schlenghauer, was also asking about other money that are collected. What is the amount of money lying in this terrain? I don't think anyone does know at this point in time. But within a democratic context, I think it's important that there's that kind of scrutiny over all of these issues. We can then make sure that the right things are being done and the right developmental processes are actually taking place. So the assurance I want to give you is that we will do more of the homework that's actually necessary. I think where there are areas of goodwill, you're going to find the kind of mobilization that Honorable Macondo was talking about, where people both in the municipality and the traditional council work together in the interest of the community. And not the I factor, but the P factor should be the dominant concern. Does this happen everywhere as it should? I don't think so. On the average, is there room for improvement? I think all of us would agree that there is certainly room for improvement in this area. But it's something that we need to all put our heads together on and see where we go. So let me hand over to the Deputy Minister and the DG for some of the specific issues that they might want to address.
Thank you, Minister. I'm taking chair of the committee. Honorable Mtagani. Honorable thing was issue on cabinet resolution. Let me just give a bit of the background on it. The traditional leaders had approached government at the time to say that the government must amend to the constitution so that it can give more powers and functions to traditional leaders. And hence that resolution arises out of. And at the time it was agreed that traditional leaders must first begin to implement the traditional leadership and governance framework. And let's see if weaknesses are implemented and identify the weaknesses. And based on that resolution, we'll then begin to look at whatever requests that are there, including what the traditional affairs, inclusive governance framework has and does not have, and so forth. So I think that we are still keeping in place in terms of the evaluation of the implementation of the traditional assets framework act as to whether it is fulfilling or not fulfilling. But obviously there are indications
that already are indicated that the situation of meeting and going forward. Whether we are made a position or different in the discussion is a matter that will only be engaging at a particular program after evaluating the implementation itself. So that is why I was seeking it to say there was a request, one thing ended, but as to which one then has the tools then come back and just evaluate the legislation itself. And then on the back to this, I think I did say that yes, agree with you, Honorable, and gave us a very good example of 47 years has bound the support is there. In the other municipalities, there's no support at all. In other, there is support. And that is why we're doing an audit in terms of which of the traditional councils are functional to the optimal and they have good best practices, and to what support mechanisms have been provided for by the municipalities and which one are not giving them any support. Where are they having good relationships and what can we learn from the best municipalities and where they are not working and what are weaknesses in the system. And then you can come up with recommendations that can then strengthen the harmonization of the relationships between traditional councils and then councillors so that they can work together in a model that is indigenous taking us forward, and that will harmonize the relationship. Honorable Mbanga, I think on the number of issues that you have raised, Minister, that there are quite a number of issues that are fundamental that might need further work and probing, as we have started to do so with certain investigations that are taking place. We'll need it coming back to them to begin to respond to some of the issues that we need, the model of leadership, the instruments, including the benefits of the minister was saying that the benefits will differ from one province to the other. And the province is educated the best most in terms of benefits, I would say. We are just looking at the Kingdom of Zulu, and yet your own province has the best, and there the support to the traditional leaders is even including the Department of Public Works that they have made arrangements. They take care of their gardens, they take care of their household matters, and so on. And other provinces, they don't do that. So therefore, it's a matter of the provinces. So we might then have to engage the provinces and develop a model that can be fair with a common standard so that there's no below standard. You're either on the standard or you go up, including even on the remunerations. We still keep benefits better than in other provinces, and so forth. So we then have to then look at those issues and then say, how then do we begin to develop national standards, long-term standards, that can then be satisfactory, and that includes also the report given to the king, and see if we cannot then develop also a model for the king so that indeed we can have that area also harmonized. And on the issue of the district municipalities and then local municipalities, and then the functions, there will also be one of the areas that we'll have to see in terms of the Municipal Infrastructure Act that will then have to be as expressive, because currency is limited in the nature in which it is, and hence things are happening in the many ways they are. And I think the very basics also now is crafting up to then look at the particular issue and then really make sure that we were able then to bring a particular harmonization. The will then deal with the issues of the teaching allowances and also other issues that are administrative in data then that might not have the incident, and including issues of capacity building as to whether we do have or we have started a program in terms of our particular capacity building. And the last one, the Honorable Mamasonzo, indeed we as a department having been engaged and flooded with requests by traditional leaders all over about the unfairness or the fairness of some of the economic activities and deals that were signed. There's one just for example, in Venda, one traditional leader, 1989, the government of Venda, Adam Tepu at the time, had signed a deal with one of the big mining companies. The mining company is still alive, very active. It's paid 20 cents per square kilometer, per hectare, per annum to the community. So when you look at the hectares that the mine is operating on, they can only get 77,000 rand a month. I'm sorry, a year. Putting 20 cents of this, 20 cents and 20 cents of everything. So it's an asset deal that is there. So they only get 77,000 who are
no development, no social development were ever implemented in the particular area. The only thing that the mining did in the social development was to give them a second-hand printer to the traditional people for their own administration. No school, no crash, no nothing of those particular things that are required in the licensing condition. And when you go to the minerals and say, are you monitoring, do you have a monitoring mechanism? Because the license are issued by you, not us, as a corporate. And the local capacity in the mineral resources, so we didn't know who would be paying and who is not paying. So those are the issues that we'll be engaging the department, as the minister was saying, to get to know and understand and we get to affirm certain rules to them or those to us in order to really begin to ensure that there's fairness in the development of the community for a better life, as my brother, bring that dignity and respect whilst cultural practices are done. And White Paper is also going on to say the role of the traditional leaders is to lobby government for the development of their area. So they need to be organized with the federal council to lobby for self-development, lobby other agencies of government also for development, and then ensure therefore that if they are to get into any activity, so they're going to be trading licenses, they can also deal with government. So there's a role for organized communities really to get into. So as expressed the White Paper, and the minister was assuming me one page on 136 of the local government White Paper on local government, and which is convening comment everywhere, looking at the mineral resources and then also the situation. There's no reason why African customs the tradition should be seen to be in conflict with the demands of modern governance. And I think the Honorable Mazondo has also explained that. What is required is an innovative institutional arrangement which combines the natural capacity of both the traditional and elected local government to advance the development of rural areas and communities, as the minister also alluded to that. The cooperative model proposed here provides a constructive role for traditional leadership at local level in the governance and development of rural communities. So therefore, that is the spirit in which we will be supporting that institution in a modernizing and also it is working on being promoted towards for the business of our own country and nothing else. And obviously, we would have to work with the traditional leadership to ensure. And I feel that this is one of the answers we will then indicate with other people who are here. And because I saw Honorable Mbanga wanted to know whether traditional leaders are in the delegation or not. So I can't leave that to the DG to deal with them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
DG?
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, Minister, and Minister. The issue of revenue collection, TC, it is clear right now, you know, after a little bit of investigation in that area, that the people that are appointed to deal with the revenue that is collected in TC are not suitable qualified people. And we are beginning to talk to the provinces that we provide capacity building in that area. If there is revenue that is collected, there has to be proper records that must be kept. The Framework Act requires that they have quarterly financial statement and all those documents. So we are working on that as we are adjusting our work towards best basics. The issues of what type of institution we want to build, that is the 2030 institution in terms of the National Development Plan. An ideal traditional council is a traditional council that does not look at itself. It looks at community development. It takes into account the needs of the people. Traditional council that is balanced, that has got gender equity, that has women that participate freely in the activities and so on. Traditional council that listens to the community, gather the needs of the community and engage the municipalities and articulate the needs of those communities on an ongoing basis and so on. So traditional council that also promotes the culture and that does not preserve harmful cultural practices, that understands that culture dynamic is changing and that kind of situation. And the traditional community that is also having the interest of its people at heart. The issue of jurisdictional areas was raised to say it is a problem. We are working with the Demarcation Board to look at the boundaries of traditional councils. At a later stage, sometime next year, we will be ready to show you how we have mapped out these jurisdictional areas. However, it will not resolve fundamental questions or difficulties where there have been artificial boundaries in one kingship. You have a artificial boundary.
Sorry for the matter here.
So, you know, the situation of our temple as an example, for example, the Western Temple and the other side, that is artificial. So both sides acknowledge that they come from the same family. So there are those issues that are being looked at policy level. And then the next issue of the sitting allowance in council meetings. The department is working on the regulations on the participation of traditional leaders in council as an interim measure until the bill is finalized. What the bill is proposing that, you know, we have more traditional leaders participating. They will no longer be having observer status only. They will be talking there, engaged, because that is important so that they can make their views heard as well in that regard. Now, many of the traditional leaders that will be participating, they will not have to qualify for sitting allowance because they will be that will be taken care of. Capacitation of traditional leaders, honorable member was talking about those that do not have even pay. Traditional leaders are highly educated today. And we have said that they are highly educated and in their own areas. I'm talking about, you know, academic qualifications. However, we do have programs that capacitate centers. The department does have, for example, on all policies that we develop, we have a specific program in the department, which is in the ATP. It was in the ATP last year. We go to all the provinces where we take attendees through all these pieces of legislation. Over and above that, we also have partnerships with the Department of Justice and Correctional Services to ensure that the presiding officers in traditional courts are effectively trained. As you know, that the cases there, they're going to send their things to magistrates and so on. So they are properly trained in that regard. I've attended a number of those classes where they are being trained on presiding officers on how to run those cases. And the issue of sustainability, affordability of these traditional leaders, that are so many, whether this is affordable. We've already started, I think, a year or two to begin to talk about traditional leaders looking at things that they used to do, issues of agricultural activity. There are charters by the Department of Agriculture that occasionally are donated to traditional leaders. We are going to pool our resources, human resources, to facilitate some of these things so that they are assisted, they don't have to receive tractors without being trained. If they are trained and we revive the agricultural practices and we bring back issues of ISIMA and things like that, you know, we believe that they can be able to have something that can be self-sustained and so on. One of the visions that we have as a department working towards is actually looking towards a situation where we have vibrant and traditional community, stable traditional community, vibrant, because the rural towns, if they are revived and you have the market and they grow things, sell them in those rural towns and so on, that in our view we believe that it would assist and so on, because it is not sustainable. The current situation is that we're just maintaining things and so on, rather than gearing them towards a transformed agenda which will make them begin to do things for them, for themselves, whoever they are. And then the next resolution of disputes and the measures in place to deal with it and so on. Firstly, we have the 1,244 pieces and claims that are being processed by the current commission, whose term, as the Deputy Minister indicated earlier, will be expiring end of December next year. And however, we have the ongoing issues that are going on and so on. And we are trying to put in mechanisms in place because many countries when they are not happy, as one of the honorable members indicated, that it's no longer about traditional leadership issues, it's more about business interest, where their businesses are for. So if the presence is the fact that, you know, you are not the right traditional leader, this is the right one, they will continue to take it to court. That out of fate or chance, because they may become the traditional leader and so on, but not because what communities there have got systems that have been there over many, many centuries. They know which lineage, where the rightful heir is supposed to be coming from and so on. People are just distorting it today. And so on. So I think that was the last thing I mentioned.
I forgot to respond to Honorable Tetra's one. I did not think we are initiating a process of the SADC, the AU type of contacts that are taking this. I said the traditional leaders on their own, they are already engaging at SADC level to form a SADC forum, not without support as a department. They are also engaging at the continental level with other traditional leaders, lobbying already the AU for it to be given a status of advisor as traditional learner. And I was just bringing it to attention, not that the department is involved, because our legislative framework is more South African. It has been long beyond the South African borders. But on their own now, they have started to do those networks that is coming. They have visitation by a number of traditional leaders now, so including Tanzania, which had abolished it during the Glasgow time. But Tanzania in the constitutional review, they threatened not to revise, and now they're looking at a model, South Africa, to see if they would then be responsible for traditional leadership in the world. So I was just saying, those things are happening. We have not been the department in the market.
So, last few points, Chairperson. Thank you very much. One is around the mining areas. There's two sides to the coin. There's the mining areas and, as Honorable Makulani was pointing out, the kind of, let's call them deals that might or might not be being made, and the accounts and how do we deal with that is one set of issues. The second is the mining town. As you know, government has an interministerial committee and a task team that's dealing with what's happening in the mining town. That will affect some traditional communities. But the key issue there is particularly in respect of migrant labor, which then brings me to my next point in respect of mining areas, is development in the sending area, where people come from. So at some stage we should also look at how the continuation of the migrant labor system into the 21st century has acted as a disruptive force to social stabilization and social cohesion. Because if you don't stabilize families, how do you say stabilize communities? If you don't stabilize communities, how do you stabilize the nation? Is, I think, a serious question for us to address in this context. The second point is in relation to districts. Our plan for districts is something that we need to try and explain once we finish our homework. Remember, the original idea in the White Paper was that there was a recognition that all municipalities that we create in the post-apartheid era will not be able to sustain themselves financially, or even in terms of the capabilities that are required, for example, to implement infrastructure projects. And therefore, there should be a stronger district in some instances which will support the local municipalities. Somewhere along the line in the last 14 years, we've lost our way on that. So currently, we are undertaking a review of all the district municipalities, together with what is below them in terms of Category B municipalities, and then looking at a different allocation of powers and functions depending on the geographic and concrete circumstances that we find in each particular area. And where necessary, we will create a shared service concept, which I think we've shared with you before, where if an individual small municipality can't act like financial officer or engineering person, then the district will employ those sorts of people and make them available to five or six municipalities. And over 10, 20, 30 years, you know, different capabilities will be built up. The last point is that we need to generate a culture of collaboration and cooperation, not a culture of destructive tension. Because we're going to live with this for many decades to come. And it will mutate and transform the relationship between the different types of institutions in our society. and there are going to be forces that you can't resist, historical forces you can't resist, like urbanization and other changes in society. I mean, if I look at the average age in this room, we are very out of touch with the Generation Z, I think they're called now, and the way in which they use technology, the way they converse with each other, the idiom that they converse in. Some of you, and I think we're in touch, but I can assure you, we're a few steps behind. And those cultural changes that are taking place as a result of technological and urbanization and our trends, surely will impact on this terrain as well as we go on. The key, I think, is for us to be alert to those changes and to have the necessary agility to adapt to those changes as they happen, as several of you actually mentioned. But once again, thank you very much for this opportunity to discuss and debate these matters.
Okay, thank you very much for this, and I think
because it's really beginning of a long process for us. To you know someone that I'm not a great
traditional leader, you know.
I like them. But already I thought that we were going to touch upon the current financial that you raised right now. But of course in the next meeting maybe we may take us to also. How far are we in terms of the overall development of these communities? And it would be important for us to have that point. You want to do it or other meeting teaches?
Leave it for other meetings because it goes with the amendment bill, traditional African amendment bill that first we have to organize them and also the practical support that we ought to give to them as a traditional people of the country.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to zoom into the issue of traditional leaders and taking up political positions. And I really think it would be correct to paint them with a brush that they can't participate, but for us to put measures in place which safeguard a conflict of interest. For an example, I know that there are some traditional leaders in this very parliament has alluded to, who have taken up parliamentary positions and have left them above our courts, who then deal with the day-to-day affairs, taking them out of those rights so that they don't discriminate against other people, because I think it would be wrong for us to leave you with the perception that, you know, we, there are no measures in place to correct and safeguard those interests.
Thank that's one perspective. You had other members of the committee expressing other perspectives. So, I think, like you were saying, let's be frank, that there are different perspectives on this issue. But there must be something that unites us. And what unites us is the development of society, is the progress of people, is the benefits accruing to the community, not to individual leaders. Right? And if we can find that area of consensus, then we can progress. But if we're going to look at this in a kind of partisan way, which we have, by the way, historically, in South Africa, and let's not laugh ourselves about that, then we will run into trouble. So I think as people coming from different political parties, we must agree on a little bit of common ground that will drive all of us forward. And then we can continue to debate different perspectives that we want to offer on the subject matter.
So I think in terms of whether traditional leaders are in the delegation, they are not, because the invitation by the committee did not specify that we should include national African traditional leaders to be here. In the previous meeting, it was mentioned in a paragraph, please see our delegation include such a delegation. So we did not include because the letter was not as instructive, but they are available to be called anytime, either committee or their own, or together with us. That's different because it's the house that is existing, the house that is in parliament, it is the house that is recognized by the law. And as I finished the chairperson, we also have an announcement that the deputy chair of the National House of Traditional Leadership has passed on. That is Hoisi Sefoole Transmakhiru from Jane First in the Hoko. He passed on Monday. Last Monday. The last Monday, the last week. And you will be late to write this book putting the book on the 15th of November, not this week and the other weekend. So that's like we will actually have to be the chair, deputy chair of the office.
Well, colleagues, I think it was not our intention to impact traditional leaders. The intention was to impact you, to have an every discussion with us on traditional affairs. And surely we are going to invite them also to meet with us for the discussion on some of the issues. Of course, the department will always be welcome to be part of that discussion. And, okay, colleagues, I think we have covered many issues for hopefully next year as we meet again, we'll then try to deal with the coalition issues and the development around those areas. What are the usual challenges in this situation? I'm not sure that it's possible to develop a country, the modernity and the also traditional thing going together, it takes long. Some of the things must be better to the better thing for it to work in this world. So yeah,
we must keep it democratic. We are not traditional either. We are elected. Yeah. No, in this case, we are elected. Now, we can't have to do it. But the point I want to make now, launching, is that we have had a discussion in the committee, I think in the old assembly, but before the end of this year, we have loved to meet with the traditional leaders. In particular, before the initiation school starts, because we wanted to raise certain issues. That was the position. I know that my passion, like today, was that we are going to be also a house of traditional leaders, because we did not only want to deal with the department. Just last week, we dealt with the performance, the PVRRs of the department. We have had an insight on what was happening in the department. This session could have been better embraced with the traditional leaders being part of this. Unless you are saying to me, before the end of this year, we are going to have that kind of an interaction. I might be wrong. And I hope that also, because we are preparing for the initiation schools, we'll have again an interaction with the department to say to us, these are the preparations in place going forward. I thought I was going to read those, but I did not say anything about initiation school and so on and so on. Because my understanding was that they're going to be that kind of inviting. Thank you very much, sir. If I'm wrong, I'll accept. I'm a Democrat.
No, I know that you're passionate about traditional leadership. You might allow it, but you'll meet with them and I'm back. Generally, let's discussion with them on some of the issues that are relevant for them. Today, we wanted just the traditional affairs in terms of the department to come and take us through on some of the issues that are addressed. That's why we couldn't really address some of the issues that we wanted us to address. Surely they'll come and meet with us and they will raise the issues of initiation and other traditional issues and cultural issues. Okay, so I think we should do that, colleagues, and move on. And then next week, of course, we'll meet with me. Ms. Hayes can to brief the committee. We know that the part of our department, they play the issue of missing the annual report and other areas of work. But in terms of the calendar of meetings, next week is supposed to be missing. In terms of the calendar of meetings, Okay, we'll work it out then. The department will work it out. The students are very anxious to attend next week again to have a discussion on that information. And let us do that. There's no other issue there. Cabinet, welcome, Jenny. Thank you very much for that. And, I think next year then we'll have enough time really to discuss some of the issues, the relations, the challenges that are there, and then see how we want to move forward. And we may consider Banga, we may consider your traditional leaders also to make themselves available. And the leadership is here in hand. I thought you are meeting with them almost every day. and then we'll do that and do the initiatives. Yeah. Okay, colleagues, can minister, deputy minister, you want to assist the committee? They are members of the committee anyway. The fact that we have come here doesn't mean that we can't make some proposal. It doesn't do with separation of power. Making a proposal doesn't do anything, no harm at all. Okay. It's the other issue that you think yourself, so I think we'll always be open for that really.
One proposal we have to consider is to once we very to more actively call up provincial administrations or individual municipalities on implementation of back to basics, so that we are really implementing, not just talking about those sorts of things. But again, the beneficiary is the community, not the individual political office bearers at the end of the day. So it will also enable the community as a committee to get in touch with the sort of grassroots issues as well.
Okay, no, that goes for this. No. I will meet with them there.
That's okay.
I talked to them. Yeah, it's enough. You mustn't become an initiator. You are not trained. You are going to kill many boys because you are not trained. Thank you very much, but I wanted to make a proposal though that deputy minister and minister, can we just the ANC local leadership just for the main for 2 minutes? Other colleagues, really. It's just natural.